This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. 7:49 a.m. Monday, the 27th of July, and we're running a poll on the BFM Twitter account. That's at BFM Radio.
Right, we are asking the question, is the Goldman Sachs 1MDB settlement a good deal for Malaysia? We've got 84 votes right now. 18% saying yes, 55% saying no, 27% just don't know. That's, I think, a fair assessment, I think, at this point. A lot of numbers have been thrown out there.
Absolutely. Do continue to let us know what you think. You've still got about an hour left to weigh in on the poll. But right now we're taking a look over at East Malaysia because a fight for control in Sabah appears to be happening in the shadows over the past few weeks or so, the rumour goes. Sabah Chief Minister Dato' Sri Shafiq Abdal has come out to reaffirm to everyone that the state government is still intact and functioning as normal, though he added he's aware of rumours and efforts to destabilise the state government by enticing Warisan MPs to switch parties.
Yeah, this comes after news that the state opposition led by former Chief Minister Tan Sri Musa Aman, who I think has got acquitted from his court cases on corruption. Anyway, apparently he is working with 19 fellow state opposition and assemblymen from Perikatan Nasional in Sabah to get at least 13 government assemblymen to hop over and obtain a simple 33-seat majority in the 65-seat state assembly.
So for more on this, we have on the line with us this morning James Chin, Professor of Asian Studies at the University of Tasmania, who's a frequent commentator on Malaysian politics. James, thank you for joining us. Now, there seems to be an attempt to oust Shafiq Abdal from the Sabah state government. Has Tan Sri Musa Aman's return weakened Shafiq's hold on the state?
Yes, good morning. Yes, obviously Musa Aman's acquittal recently means that the opposition in Sabah is strengthened. Musa is highly influential as an ex-chief minister of Sabah, and he's probably the biggest political warlord in Sabah. So the thinking among Sabahans is that now that he is no longer have any legal issues facing him, he will lead the charge to bring over as many defectors as possible. I think you mentioned earlier that they need about a dozen people to jump over. My understanding is that there's already five or six who are waiting or ready to jump over. So they're really looking at probably less than a dozen members to jump over right now. I think the thing that's holding them back is that there's still uncertainty at the federal level. A lot of Sabah politicians will look towards what's happening in Kuala Lumpur before they decide whether to jump over.
So, James, with that in mind, do you think it's just a matter of time then?
Yes and no. A lot will, as I mentioned earlier, a lot will depend on what happens in Kuala Lumpur. But the second part is that a lot will also happen, what's going to happen in the local Sabah situation. Because right now in Sabah, although things are a bit fluid, there's basically two camps, Warisan camp the UMNO stroke Perikatan camp. But the Perikatan camp itself is also divided. So, for example, we know that Bung Mokhtar is not very happy that Musa Aman has come back. And also over the weekend, the former UMNO strongman from Sabah, the former foreign minister, has taken over Parti Cinta Sabah. So now he's also making a bid to take over the Sabah leadership as well. So on the opposition side, they also divided in addition to the government.
Is the notion of Shafiq being a prime minister, I mean, is it persuasive enough narrative to keep MPs from jumping ship in Sabah?
Well, initially when it was announced that Shafiq will be a potential Pakatan Harapan prime ministership, there was a lot of excitement. But now I think with the rejection of Shafiq by PKR and the Anwar camp, I think the excitement has died down. So I don't think that that is a factor now. The biggest factor is how strong Perikatan will be at the federal level. If Perikatan becomes very powerful or very strong and cohesive at the federal level, this will provide the impetus for the people to jump. Because what will happen is that if you are a Warisan Adu now, obviously if you're going to jump, you want to jump to a stronger party. If you're not sure how well Perikatan is doing, obviously you're not going to jump.
And James, moving over to Sarawak, it's been reported that Sarawak Chief Minister Abang Johari Erping intends to fight for one-third of the 222 parliamentary seats from the federal government, given how important the East Malaysian states will be. But the question is, will we see this actually materialise?
At the present moment, no. Part of it has got to do with the change in the Electoral Commission. As your listeners know, the head of the Electoral Commission is now the Speaker of the Dewan Rakyat. And also most of the reforms that Pakatan Harapan government wanted to change in the electoral system, they're all basically dead. In fact, the report was ready, but it was never formally tabled. But my understanding is that the report does not cover the so-called one-third seats to be given to Sabah and Sarawak. I think there was very little support for this proposal in Malaya, although there's strong support for this in Sabah and Sarawak. You have to remember, in order for you to change this system, you need Parliament to vote for it, and you also need a very strong push from the federal government and the Electoral Commission, and I don't think that's forthcoming.
If you had to put a number to how much support something like this would have in Parliament, James, what kind of numbers are we looking at? Is it anywhere near the simple majority?
No. Unfortunately, I think among Malayan politicians, they really do not want to give Sabah and Sarawak one-third of the seats for the very simple reason that the way it works in the Malaysian constitution is that for constitution amendments, you need two-thirds majority. So if you give one-third to the MPs from Sabah and Sarawak, this means that you give de facto veto to the MPs in Sabah and Sarawak. And unfortunately, the MPs in Malaya and Malayan politicians do not want to give that veto power to people from Sabah and Sarawak.
What we know that is Kuching is now a red zone for COVID-19. Does this in any way affect GPS's standing in the state polls that's likely to happen, I think, in November?
Yes. Obviously, I think people are very surprised that the red zone has come back. Initially, the last couple of weeks, people thought that Sarawak was doing quite well. As you know, they control their borders quite tightly. But it looks like being a red zone in normal usage, this means that there's local transmission. It's not only the imported cases. So I think, yes, this will affect the standing of the GPS. But I think people also understand that this thing is something that's very difficult to control. And it's not really just Sarawak. I think the reality is that there's been massive underreporting for the whole of Malaysia. We're not doing wide enough testing, not only for Sarawak, but for the whole country. So I suspect the local transmission rate is probably higher than what is reported. But Sarawak, it's much harder to control in Sarawak due to the size and also the fact that the population is sort of packed together. So if they don't get it controlled in Kuching, I suspect it will spread to the other major centres like Sirian, Cebu and Miri as well. So it's something that's actually quite dangerous that's happening now.
Thank you so much for speaking with us this morning, James. That was Professor James Chin, Professor of Asian Studies at the University of Tasmania, giving us a snapshot of what's been happening over in Sabah and Sarawak, both in the COVID-19 front at the end as well as on the political front. And I think what he pointed out with regard to the fact that Musa Aman's return does strengthen the opposition in Sabah is also going to be a very interesting situation, because Musa Aman has been effectively politically out of commission for quite a few years since GE14 due to the corruption charges that were pending against him. But now he's back in full force, seeing that he's been fully acquitted.
Machinations perpetually at play, it seems. There's always something going on in the background. It's like an iceberg, right? Malaysian politics. What you see at the top is maybe 10% of what's really going on behind.
And it's what's going on beneath the surface that's going to sink the Titanic,
correct.
Right?
And it's all in it's all in these closed rooms. You don't really know what's going on. We all try to see what we can find out. But really, you think they're turning left, they turn right. And it's always, it's always an interesting thing to observe at the very least.
Yeah, so I think fundamentally, like what he said, people are looking at what's happening at the federal level, and this comes down to Pakatan Harapan. It needs to sort itself out. The tussle between Tun Mahathir and Dato Sri Anwar Ibrahim, you know, they have to really work it out, right, between these two gentlemen. So either PKR budge from his stance or Pakatan Harapan give in on who's going to be the next prime minister, should they even make any headway.
Yes, I think so. That is the longest standing question when it comes to this coalition, you know, whether or not they can resolve their leadership issues. But right now we have the 8 o'clock news bulletin for you. And then Roshan Kanasan is going to be speaking with Lim Ming Chang, CEO of LKL International, on The Breakfast Grill. So be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.